This program comes to you by electrical transcription. The Treasury Star Parade. With Miss Gladys Wathout, John Garfield, Al Goodman and his orchestra and chorus, and Frederick March as our master of ceremonies.
Send bonds today, bonds of freedom, what we're sending bonds today.
This is Frederick March, ladies and gentlemen, in another of the new series of programs brought to you by the Treasury Department. Right here beside me is one of the loveliest ladies of the opera, the concert stage, and the screen. A small, dark, vivacious, and utterly ravishing creature. Miss Gladys Wathout, singing Bless This House. Thank you. Thank you, Gladys Wathout. Out of the darkness and despair of war have come inspiring and heart-lifting deeds of heroism and valor, which have made nations cheer and poets sing since the beginning of the world. Gene Fowler has added his contribution in a tense and exciting tone poem, and Meredith Wilson has written an equally thrilling symphonic poem to accompany it. The Jarvis Bay, as read by John Garfield.
Bulletin from the London Bureau of the Associated Press, November 6, 1940. The administration today announced the sinking of the Australian freighter HMS Jarvis Bay while on convoy duty in the mid-Atlantic. She's an old freighter of some 14,000 tons. Standing in the roadstead of a port somewhere south of Singapore. She lists a bit. Her gear is obsolete. Her iron skin blistered, pocked with rust. Her engines are rheumatic. and a saw-tooth screw will yield less 14 knots. She's the old Jarvis Bay of Australian registry, resting between tides, somewhere south of Singapore. The Jarvis Bay is nodding half asleep when a gig draws alongside and has brought aboard a flag of the blue field. A storied ensign, emblem of the British Naval Reserve. Up the starboard ladder way, there comes a new master, puffing somewhat with middle age. He looks about, he looks above, below, forward, aft, he peers. His is the manner of a man recapturing a memory. He is Fogarty Fagan, called from retirement to command the Jarvis Bay. His voice rolls against the breakwater. His big hands grasp the teakwood rail. He swears a bit, and finally, the Jarvis Bay awakens. Soon a battery is supplied, a small one. Guns of 5-inch caliber. Then, with 100 young reservists for a crew, Jarvis Bay puts out to sea from somewhere south of Singapore. Captain Fogarty Fagan has a distant rendezvous with other old masters, summoned from retirement, from their little farms, from their office stools, from their fireside chairs, from the cities and the shires. Now up comes the Jarvis Bay, up from tropical waters, through Suez, through the Strait of Gibraltar, out and across the Atlantic, and through the Americas. In a harbor of the north, and with brave haste, the old hulls are laden to their loading lines with cargoes from us to Britain. Captain Fogarty Fagan listens to the rumbling of winches as things needful for the lifebeat of England's great heart are stowed aboard. Hurry, damn it, Mr. Wilson, sir, he shouts to his first officer. We're not sleeping now, Mr. Wilson, somewhere south of Singapore. From a Canadian bay, from behind the fog bank of November dawn, a convoy line puts out. 38 ships put out to sea with cargoes for Britain. A consignment to help sustain the lifebeat of England. Goods to provision an isle that for 1,000 years has prized the freedom and the dignity of man. The morning of the 5th finds the Jarvis Bay in a convoy strung like a procession of pilgrims against the dawn. The ship's bell sounds. The practice rounds are fired. The sun is on the meridian, and Fogarty Fagan shoots the sun for latitude. 8 bells again, and Fogarty Fagan shoots the sun for longitude. And then at 5 o'clock, the lookout calls from the crow's nest. Ships are off the starboard bow! Through his glass, Fogarty Fagan makes out smoke, a black gargoyle in the sky, east by southeast, then sights a ship, hull down, and now a battleship comes broiling over the horizon. She opens fire with heavy guns. Captain Fogarty Fagan telegraphs his engine room to strain the boilers till they burst. He bellows, curses, brings to bear the pop guns of his battery against the Goliath armor of the battleship. He sends up smoke to screen the fleet. He orders all the convoy ships to scatter wide and fast. Then Fogarty Fagan sets out alone to meet the battleship. 5-inch guns against 11-inch guns. Eggshell hull against Krupp plate. Damn it, Mr. Wilson, sir, he shouts. We're not hearing mandolins today, somewhere south of Singapore. This is a mad thing to do, this sea charge of the Jarvis Bay. Yet a sky of dead admirals look down from the Grand Haven. Look down on Fogarty Fagan, whose senile tub steams for the battleship. Nelson, Drake, Beatty, Harwood. Yes, and the Americans, Porter, Farragut, and John Paul Jones all look down in wonderment. And now a burst of shrapnel rakes the Jarvis Bay and tears the right arm from the sleeve of Fogarty Fagan. He does not fall. He grasps the teakwood rail with the other hand, masking his agony with bellowings that rise above the guns. Nor will he let a bandage be placed upon the stump. He waves the stump. And Mr. Wilson knows, and the sky of dead admirals know, that if a hand were there, it would be making a great fist. Hoggity Fagan keeps his little guns ablast. A salvo comes with the top roll of the battleship. And now the ensign, emblem of the blue field, is shot away. Enraged, bloody, rocking on his heels, Hoggity Fagan roars, "Hoist another ensign, damn it! Mr. Wilson, sir, hoist another flag!" The boatswain procures a flag from the locker, a flag used for the burial of the dead at sea. The Jarvis Bay, ablaze from stern to bow, at dusk, still fires of puny guns and will not change her course. Salvos and turrets, guns 3-3, make great geysers grow about the old ship's wake, but still her guns give voice. And now she's struck below the waterline. Her boilers go. The Jarvis Bay begins to settle by the stern. Yet sinking, still she faces her antagonist. And then the waters begin to close over her. The waters close over Fogarty Fagan and over the flag that was once used for burials at sea. And now night spreads its shroud. Of 38 ships in the convoy, 29 are saved. Their cargo saved to help sustain the lifebeat of England. While a sky of dead admirals look on and claim Captain Fogarty Fagan for their own, the Jarvis Bay goes down. Goes down as no mere casualty of storm. To rust out fathoms deep in common grave, with sisters unremembered by the years. The Jarvis Bay of Australian registry, from somewhere south of Singapore, goes down in the history of an isle that for 1,000 years has prized the freedom and the dignity of man.
You know, friends, to hear some folks talk, they're all Colin Kellys and Sergeant Yorks. They're all ready to help our country by talking. But how many of us are ready to help by sacrifices? Let each of us ask himself, am I only talking patriotism? Or am I really acting patriotism? Am I just waving a flag? Or am I investing in war bonds and stamps regularly, week by week? Am I living with all my accustomed comforts? Or am I giving up something so that I can invest a part of my income in the war bonds that help give our fighting men the weapons they need? Only bullets and bombs will win this war. To help pay for them, we should each invest a part of our incomes in war bonds and stamps regularly, every week or payday. Remember, this is your country. Keep it yours. The United States Treasury Department thanks the artists who gave their talents for this performance. Gladys Swartout, John Garfield, and Frederick March. A special bow to Gene Fowler and Meredith Wilson for the poem and music of The Jarvis Bay. And appreciation to this station for the use of its facilities. Tune in the Treasury Star Parade.
Freedom, what we're having on today. Pick up.